Happy Monday. Welcome back to the About Last Night podcast. How are you guys? Hope you had a great weekend. I was in Kentucky, Lexington, Kentucky, home of bourbon and Johnny Depp and Cincinnati is not too far from here, or Chicago. There was a knife convention happening at my hotel. It happens every year. Somebody said, what kind of knives? Like cooking? I go, less Gordon Ramsay, more Duck Dynasty. Hung out with some of the peeps. They were sweet. They love knives. There's a guy named Jeremy Marsh, I think. They said is big in the knife world. Met him. Maybe he's cool in the knife world. Seemed like it. Seemed legit. Sold a lot of knives. They did. Bought a lot of knives. People made knives. There was some kid in the elevator. I was like, are you here for this? Seems like an adult thing. He was like, I like knives. I was like, what kind? He's like, oh, types of knives. And that was that. Shows are great. Comedy Off-Broadway. Shout out to all the killers. Catherine, Mike, Luke, Nick, John, a bunch of killers. Great club. Comedy Off-Broadway. Teresa and gang. Crushed it. These guys know what they're doing. Go see and support that club in a great little spot. They take care of you. They put you in a good spot so you can walk to the club. Went to their mall one day. That was fun. And Cincy and Kentucky are cool spots. I flew into Cincy. I'm flying out there in a few hours. Anyway, great time. Thank you, everyone that came out. A lot of ALN fans, a lot of Corolla fans. It was great. Can't wait to go back. A lot of crowd work clips coming, by the way. Holy fucking shit. Get ready. Get ready. Today's episode is a great episode. It's with a guy I respect, I admire. He's fun as shit, and he's responsible for snapping the Mariners, my Seattle Mariners, professional baseball team in Seattle, snapping their 20-plus year drought for making the postseason. And we sat down at T-Mobile Park where the Mariners play in the press box for almost 90 minutes, and it's fucking awesome. It's a part two conversation with Mariners president of baseball operations, Jerry Dipoto, former GM, helped and is helping and will continue to help construct and develop and build a championship squad. If you love baseball, and especially if you love the Mariners, you're going to love this interview. Spliced together, just like the Sean Kemp episode, with videos and pictures galore to kind of fill out and paint the picture of things we're talking about and referencing. Enjoy the hell out of this episode. Follow the Mariners at Seattle Mariners. Follow me at Adam Ray Comedy on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. ALN Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Tour dates at AdamRayComedy.com. I am coming on the road to Snoqualmie Casino next weekend. This weekend, December 11th, Sunday, Snoqualmie Casino. Come out and see your boy. Can't wait. Hometown show, Snoqualmie Casino, December 11th in Snoqualmie at the casino. I believe show is 7 p.m. And then the following weekend, I will be with Sal Volcano in Sacramento, San Jose, and Santa Rosa. Check SalVolcanoComedy.com for those tickets. December 22nd and 23rd, I'll be in Portland at Helium Comedy Club. Come out and see me. Three shows, Friday, Saturday. AdamRayComedy.com for those tickets. And then, of course, New Year's, Vegas, the 29th of December through January 1st. Vegas, Tropicana Laugh Factory. Can't wait. Love the room. Love the club. 2023 tour dates are stacking up. Tons of my own headlining dates, and then some more with Sal and Chris D'Elia, all at AdamRayComedy.com. Check those out. Come out and see me. Young Rock, Fridays on NBC. Welcome to Chippendales, every Tuesday on Hulu. And the merch, AdamRayComedy.com. Go get it. More fun stuff coming. Can't wait. Doing a lot of content and podcasts this week. Can't wait for you guys to see it all. Enjoy your week. Thanks for listening, and enjoy this special episode of the About Last Night podcast with the Mariners GM, President of Baseball Operations, Jerry Dipoto.
Hey, it's Herbert, and you're listening to the About Last Night podcast, you slippery little son of a bitch.
Gooby is he's dialed with Gooby. No, I call him Goobs. There's a
Goobs is a great nickname.
For the longest time, my wife didn't know what his first name was, and
because it was just Goobs.
Yeah.
Well, that brings me to my first question. Do you have a nickname? Do people call you like Depotes or JD or Fountain of Youth.
Some of these things.
Yeah, or Brad Pitt's doppelganger.
Definitely not.
You said, by the way, that you've never gotten, or you don't get carded much anymore, but I have to assume there's, is it like a running, I don't know, joke within the organization of like, oh yeah, Jerry does, you know, still gets carded for like that type of thing, or is it?
Not really. Really? You know, there's a, it will be somewhat of a joke with my family because my kids will laugh when someone, you know, in years past when someone would ask me for an ID.
Right.
You know, and I share it with you. I would tell them, I'm going to show you my ID, but you're going to be embarrassed.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure people want to know, the stars are just like us. Does Jerry DePoto go to the store and buy his own booze, or do you send somebody out?
Oh, no, I buy my own booze. And I have some, a fair bit of it delivered as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's, yeah. I mean, once Postmates or any sort of app delivery service came around, I was like, oh, this is going to be the end of me. And I'm not going to be able to pay for a kid to go to college because I wanted a Slurpee at 2 a.m. because I was high. Jerry DePoto back on the pod. You're the best. Set it up to do it in this beautiful spot. Does the view get old? I think I asked you this last time, but we weren't here.
It never does. Actually, the thing I like best about being in season, outside of the obvious, which is you get to see a game every night,
yeah,
is that, you know, for the work day through the off season, our offices are across the hallway. During the season, I find an excuse to come over to this side of the hall at about, you know, 11 or noon, right after having lunch,
yeah,
and then just work the rest of the day looking out at the field until it's time to go downstairs and hang out by the staff, players, et cetera.
And even during most games, and I know you, when we were texting mid-season, post last pod, you were saying how many, you know, you're like, oh, I can't. I was, you know, like, I'm going to be up in town. There's a show if you want to go to, or even down here. And you're like, no, I'm going to Anaheim or I'm going to this. And then in town, you're like, I'm going to the game. You go to pretty much every home game. Yeah.
Every game. Yeah.
How many like road games will you try to hit?
You know, there's in my early years as a general manager, I would go to every road game. You know, it was just part of trying to build relationships, get to know everybody.
Right.
And you know, in the time since now, I tend to pick the cities I want to go to. And,
you know, almost like the way Adam Sandler picks a location for a movie. Africa would be cool.
That was the one I tried.
Yeah.
So I tend to go to the same places year after year. Might try something new, you know, in a given year. But mostly it's my family, my extended family lives in Kansas City.
Oh, nice.
So I'll always go to Kansas City.
It's a BBQ. Yeah.
We never don't go to New York when it's time to play the Yankees or the Mets.
Right.
Never don't go to Boston. With the exception being, if those trips fall in conjunction with our draft, then, you know, the draft is it's a very unique thing for all sports. And I imagine it's more complex for baseball than any of them because our draft is so much longer than the other leagues. And
it might be the draft that most sports fans know the least about.
Yeah. Right? Including the people who actually execute. And I say this, we've done well in this space, but you know, when I started working in baseball operations, the draft was 50 rounds long, and then we shrunk it to 40, and now it's 20, and it's still a three-day event where you are drafting, you know, we're drafting, you know, 1,200 players in our heyday.
Wow.
And, you know, even now, when you're talking about 20 rounds times 30 teams, and it really starts to add up. And in order, you know, when we were doing the 40 round draft, in order to get to the point where you were able to draft 40 players, you'd have to have about 1,000 players turned in. And, you know, I remember this, if you don't mind me going on.
Please. Tangent. No, if you could wrap this up in about 2 minutes, we got to just close. This is a shorter pod today. Every story you want to tell.
So Scott Servais,
come on.
Our wonderful
should have been manager of the year. Yeah, for sure.
Got hosed for a second consecutive year.
Come on.
You know, Scott was he came to Anaheim with me when I went to the Angels back in the fall of 2011.
Right.
And he was the assistant general manager who oversaw scouting and player development. And Scott had a vast history in player development.
That's why he's so good with players.
He's wonderful. And it's programming, it's teaching. He's a teacher who happens to be teaching baseball.
Wow.
And, you know, that was his background. He came from a family of coaches. He, after retiring, he went into player development with the Texas Rangers and spent 6 years running their farm system. comes over to the Angels, and it was the first time he was ever going to oversee scouting as well, which had been what I was doing for the previous, you know, 15, 10 years or whatever it was. And Scott said when we were getting ready for our first draft, you know, we had about, you know, 900 names. And the 900 names in a 40-round draft seems like you're going to be short, because if you just do the math, it's 1,200 players. And I said, you'll be fine at 900. And he was wigging out about the fact. He said, we're going to run out of names. We're not going to know who to have. And I said, we won't run out of names. But if in the event that should come to pass, and we all you have to do is hold your hand up and say, we pass. And they'll let you pass.
So how many rounds again for a baseball
game? So now it's down to 20, you know?
Even when the Duggars had 19 and counting kids, I was like, there's no way you know all your kids. There's no way you love them all. There's no way. That's just too many. So 1,200 players, I'm like, how do you get invested in that many people?
Globally, we have 63 people in our scouting department.
Gotcha.
Who, you know, from the Far East to Iowa, you know, they'll manage writing reports on and getting to know as many of these players as they can.
So there's somebody in Iowa right now that could send you a text tomorrow being like, I just met this sophomore in high school who's going to be the next Randy Johnson.
That's right. Or more importantly, when they're sitting in the draft room, they know who the kids are. When we're talking about a guy, you know, Adam might be sitting in the outer ring of our draft room. And
I just got the invite. Mark this.
We're talking to them about a given player, right. And he's going to chime in about his makeup, about his work ethic, and they get to know these kids, and it's amazing how in depth, you know, our scouting group will get with the background profile on these young players.
It's impressive for sure. Immediately, what it's feeling similar to is when I was in the fraternity at AAPI at USC, and they would have the rush, and the social chairs would have these meetings. A brother would go, "Hey, we're having this event. We're going to a Laker game, and then this club come out," and then they talk to you. And then being on the other side, once I was in the fraternity, everyone would go into the brotherhood room and talk about the guys they met that night. And the girls do it too, where it's like, they'd be like, all right, Adam Ray. And somebody would stand up and go, I talked to Adam for about 20 minutes. He was really chill. He's a big fan of boobs, which we all love. So that's pretty cool. He drank a lot. He was a little aggressive on the cheese plates, but I think we can all get over that. I feel like there's a similar vibe with the way you guys are talking about players, where you're going through all the pros and cons, strengths and weaknesses. The question I'm getting at is if somebody, can you tell in their description of a player if they're maybe not as passionate, but they still want to, you know, provide, like, here's somebody that we're looking at, but you can tell like they're enthusiastic?
Not for me.
Yeah. Yes.
We get it all the time.
Pick up on that.
So you know, when I first started in scouting, we used to, when we were done scouting a player or a team, you know, we had to call in and leave a voicemail message. And I'm thinking, come on, man, what is this, 1975? It's a voicemail message.
Yeah.
But after I started running scouting departments, the voice is a really important aspect of evaluating a player, because you, as the director, whatever you're directing, you get to hear the passion or the inflection the voice, you know. And I never considered that. And a veteran baseball man told me, he said, it's not what they say, it's how they say it. You know, they're always going to think that their player can hit or their player can run. And he might be the best hitter or runner in Iowa or in Illinois. They don't know what it looks like compared to the best hitter or runner in Texas or in Florida, but they do know how much they want that player because they got to know the person, and you'll hear that come out.
Yeah, tone in what you say. I love that you said, what did you say again? It's not what you say, it's how you say
it's
it.
It's exactly right.
Yeah, if Neil Armstrong would have said, that's one small step for man, a giant leap for mankind, you'd be like, all right, is he even on the moon? These guys are a little too silly for my taste.
Giddy up, baby! Giddy up! Giddy up! And the Mariners win this ballgame!
Okay, so we need to talk about, because we're here, and I loved seeing you in the, I think they cut to you when they, after they cut to Riz, when Big Dumper, who just raised the 12th man flag.
Which is awesome. Yeah.
Awesome. And the fact that he's embraced it, I actually did Wyman and Bob, my favorite show here on the ESPN Seattle, and they had Dumper on right after me. And he was talking about how his mom has even embraced it, and where she's like now referring, like, I'm Big Dumper's mom, which is awesome. And he was a great interview. They cut to you in the booth, and right after Riz, Can you just speak to that game, the energy, afterwards in the clubhouse, the whole, I mean, service on the field, clearly a cigar, maybe had snuck in a shot. Amazing.
Maybe, yeah.
amazing on the mic, by the way. I'm sure you knew that he had that in his pinky, but just, I guess the atmosphere, how about that going into the game? Are you nervous, excited?
I think excited, you know, all of us anticipated that that was going to be our night, including the fans. You know, they packed in, they filled it.
Was it Friday night fireworks show too?
It was.
Get
and,
out of here.
You know, it like couldn't have drawn it up much better. And John Stanton walked into my office, which faces First Street and, or First Avenue. And he walked in and he pointed out the window and he said, we don't usually see that. And it was, I would say it was about 3:30 in the afternoon, and you know, First Avenue around the statues and headed up down, you know, Edgar Martinez, just lines of people. Flight. And it was fun. It was unique. And then when the game started, you felt the drama building. And I'll give Oakland a ton of credit. They played us as tough as can be. And yeah. You know, and we weren't sharp for the final 2 weeks of September. And, you know, in that moment when it starts, when we drift toward late innings and everything's tied and now we're headed into the extras and the heightened awareness, like something special is going to happen here. And when Cal hit that home run, first of all, it's the coolest moment, really the coolest moment in my baseball career. Just, you know, of all the things that I've been part of or have seen, nothing beat that because of the way the crowd reacted, the way the anticipation of two decades of people waiting to see this, and Cal's reaction, you know, like the holy shit, grab your hat. There's no way this is happening.
It's what every kid, yep. When every player says you dream about that as a kid, especially professional players. I mean, you know, I'm not a professional baseball player, not with that attitude, but I also dreamt of doing the walk-off home run when I played Little League.
Everybody did, right? And he did it. No one's ever done it before. So this we found out after the fact, no one has ever hit a walk-off home run to clinch a playoff spot for their team in Major League history. It's never happened.
On a Friday before a fireworks show with J.D. DePoto. Yeah, I love how specific the stats get. Yeah, on a Friday with the weather, with the wind chill at 46 degrees. Yeah, the vibe was insane. I was in my hotel room in Memphis shooting Young Rock. The cast wanted me to go out. I was like, I got to watch this game. I was like, I can't be out because I'm going to be a mess with you guys and I'm also just going to be antisocial. So I'm on my computer watching it on MLB TV, just sipping cocktails. And it was the drama, you're right, the drama built to where it was like, the script is kind of, the stage is set. Like it feels like a walk-off should happen. Were fans nervous or was it just like everyone kind of felt like that moment was imminent? And so it was like...
I feel like most felt the moment was imminent,
yeah.
You know, but the longer it goes, the less imminent it feels, right?
Yeah.
There, like, you feel like, all right, this moment's passing by. And, you know, I can remember earlier in the month, we were playing Atlanta and the entire Atlanta Braves coaching staff are people that I either played with or played against.
That happens a lot.
Yeah. You just know all these people. So I'm overstanding with them before the final game of that, which was an epic series in and of itself. You know, it was a phenomenal.
Julio and Eugenio.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was actually this day. So, you know, we're standing there and, you know, Walt Weiss, who was a teammate of mine, and Kevin Seitzer and Eric Young Jr., another teammate.
Was Wally Joyner there? We have the same birthday, by the way.
Wally?
Yeah, that was
also
the first,
a great guy.
First really?
Yeah, great guy.
First celebrity. Also, you're naming names that are just such to me classic baseball names.
Yeah, they're all former teammates. They're great guys.
Awesome.
But they're all sitting there and Ron Washington, who for years was managing the Rangers in the division and then was the infield coach for the A's. So all the years that we had been, you know, I'd been in the American League West, Wash was there and Wash walks over and he gives me a hug and he said, well, congratulations. He said, you finally got them there. You finally did it. And I said, Wash, you give somebody long enough and enough trust, they'll figure it out, right? And I said, but I will say we still have some work to do. He goes, you'll get it done. So that's done. And then we played poorly for the next 7 days. And I'm like, did we just get jinxed or something here? Because then we went on that last road trip.
Yes.
It was just awful.
That was KC and then
KC, Oakland,
Texas, maybe.
Yeah.
Speak to that real quick because, we were, I mean, with the, was it 14 game win streak earlier in the year? And then we were just kind of cruising for a little bit. And Julio was becoming the face of baseball, which was getting us a lot of attention.
High drive, deep left center field. That baby's way gone. Julio!
Blue Jay fans in the building, those four games. Fly ball. Easy play. Wow, the wind must be holding it up. Julio had to come in. Wow, what a great athletic play.
Here comes the payoff. Julio blasts this out to center. This is driven back by the wall. Julio, grand slam.
I think we were just clicking on a lot of positive cylinders. So to have a stretch, especially the timing of it, is so awful. What is the, is this a thing you turn to Scott to go keep them, you know, positive, keep it loose? Like, what is the, are you guys having discussions behind closed doors about it?
Yeah, we did. I think there was, by the time we got to the end of that road trip, you know, and I believe the order of events where we played poorly in Oakland, and then we played even worse in Kansas City. And we were standing in the coach's room. And it, as a general rule, there's an expectation. We all believe we're going to make the postseason. I think by this time, we're 99% right. certainty of going to the postseason. And you don't really believe the 99% when you're losing games the way we were losing them. You could feel tension building. And one night we were sitting in the clubhouse. This was in Oakland. We were sitting in the clubhouse, and Scott comes in and throws his hat on the table. And one of our coaches leaned back in the chair and said, "Boy, we got to change something." I said, "Not really. It's just baseball. You know, you just said there's sooner or later they're going to realize that the golden egg is right there, and they won't play tense because we were playing tense. And you know, the way to solve tension isn't to go add more tension. It's to find a way to take it away. The way you can take it away is just don't talk about it. You know, go out, do something fun, do something, you know, outside the norm. Don't take BP one day." This is where I think Joe Maddon made his hay back in the Rays Cubs days when he was the first to go off the reservation and say, "Screw it, we're not taking BP for the next 3 months," you know, and the guys responded. It was something different, you know, and here we are. We had 2 weeks left to go in a season where it seemed imminent we were going to the postseason, and our guys were tense, and we had to find a way to break the tension.
Can you gauge the tension? Like, do you see like Ty going up there like,
"Oh, it's palpable."
Fuck. Like, yeah. And you're like, "Relax, bro." Yeah. Or is it?
It's just trying too hard. It's not fear. It's more, they're putting more in. And you see guys, you know, they're pushing harder, thinking they have to do something more instead of just doing what they always do. And, wow. You know, where it finally broke for us was what I would call the worst loss that I think we've experienced in our time with the Mariners was the loss in Kansas City, where, you know, I think we put up an 8 spot and then we went out and gave up an 8 spot.
Yeah, dude.
Bases are loaded. Class is what? 3 men here in the 6th. Chance for JP.
It is center and a base hit. Kelnick scores and a chance for 2. That's what happens. Toro slides across. Double digits for the Mariners today.
It is a 1-run game.
Oh my goodness.
Ryan O'Hearn has singled, flied out, walked and scored.
Line to right field. Unbelievable. Olivares scores. Massey is around third. The Royals have taken the lead.
12-11.
My dad came to that game with me and was sitting in the box and was, you know, excited to be there. He's out for the day. We're watching a ball game. We are cruising. We just dropped a touchdown and an extra point on him. And then we come back and
like
we're copping it right back up. When we started to give that game back, he turned around and he said, "Well, this isn't going according to script." And I said, "Yeah, we're not going to talk about this."
There is, it's so interesting to hear and refreshing that it is just not as black and white as that, but like that, you know, we're all still people at the end of the day. And that a way to, like you said, cut tension is to not make a bigger deal out of it. And to do something fun, did Scott organize like a Guitar Hero night, or was it like, did you kind of really push guys to like not do a certain thing, or like go, obviously not go out, but are there things that he has in his bag of tricks that kind of helps cut through it?
So we do a lot of those things through the course of the year, and usually they're scheduled ahead of time. The way you break the tension is, hey, no BP tomorrow, show and go, and guys will, you know, somebody's still going to show up at 1 o'clock in the afternoon because that's their rhythm and that's right. their timing, and the other guy's going to roll in at 5:30 and say, hey, let's play. And that was the tonic this time, was show and go. It worked. So we showed and goed quite a few times for the rest of the season. And the guys, once we got back on track, we responded more often than not with like the do fun things. I mean, we'll do anything from the dress up days. I think we did a Twins Day where you got partnered with a, you know, you got partnered with somebody that was drawn out of a hat, and then you had to dress as identical twins.
Amazing.
Which was pretty funny, you know?
Yeah.
My favorite version of that, you remember Deho Lee?
Oh, yeah.
Deho was a riot. I mean, fun guy to have on a team.
Awesome.
And, you know, showing up on Twins Day with Deho was phenomenal. You know, both he and his partner came dressed up. They were wearing kimonos and like old, the traditional, you know, regalia. And it was just so funny.
You know what I'm just thinking of? I did the roast of Big Poppy. I don't know if I told you about this, with Bill Burr, Anthony Mackie, Lenny Clark. It was in Boston.
This is funny. Yeah.
Who else was on it? Pedroia and Gronk. And I dressed up in full prosthetic as an 80-year-old Yankees fan. Couldn't recognize. I went in on Pedroia so hard that he looks over to my buddy, Josh Wolf, a comedian who organized it, was like, who the fuck is this old guy? Like, I'm really tired of it. Because I hit everybody, but I probably had 6 or 7 in a row where it was like, you know, Dustin Pedroia's here. We all know Dustin plays second base, but his most natural position is dancing next to a pot of gold at the end of a rainbow. Just
that's not right. Yeah.
Slaying him to where he was just like, enough short jokes, man. But I'm thinking it could be fun to do some sort of like roast of the, like me in full as, I don't know who it is, maybe an ex-player from like the early Mariners days coming into the clubhouse to roast everybody.
I'm pitching it now. Yeah, this would be fun.
Okay.
I'd go with Felix.
Oh, you know? Oh yeah.
I'd go with Felix.
Yeah. So you bring Felix in to do it and dress him up.
There's no, I'd make Felix the roastee.
Oh, gotcha. Right? Oh, so you bring me in as an old player and then set up Felix to roast in front of everybody?
Because Felix is the bounce point. So many of the great Mariners teams in the 90s, you know, those the fun, like the Junior and Buehner,
yeah.
Dan Wilson and Edgar, like those groups, they played together for a long time. And then that group led up to Felix. And then Felix, for the longest time, he was the pivot point.
Gotcha.
He took you from the Edgar, Dan Wilson era to, you know, Ichiro into that next chapter.
Wow.
So they touched a lot of guys.
Okay, so I'm
crying. And he's fun.
He seems awesome. I'm crying in Memphis when Cal hits the home run.
I thought you were telling me you were crying in Memphis when Felix came out and threw the first pitch in that playoff game.
Very emotional for that. That was...
A lot of people were.
All right, put a pin in that. So Cal hits the dinger. What's the initial emotion? I mean, just when everyone's going crazy, is it like, are you almost like euphoric to where you can't? Because I mean, I'm watching whoever, by the way, was directing the broadcast, crushed it.
Oh, killed it. Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't know how much you pick up.
I've gone back
stuff.
And watched it. Yeah.
It was from, again, cutting to you to Riz going nuts. The energy, everybody, they cut to every pocket of like 300 level to people right behind home plate.
Wow, indeed. Now, wow, this time up for a blown call strike for a home run.
What a great effort by Logan Gilbert, going 8 strong, giving up just the 1 run. Terrific.
You cannot ask.
This is going to be the biggest winner's dance going right now. This circle is going to have everybody in and down on the field.
Wait for everybody. Wait for all the guys.
Congratulations to Jerry DePoto.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, I love it.
I love it.
Beautiful.
I love it.
Beautiful.
Yes. Yes. Playoffs, baby. The dream has happened. The drought is over.
And the emotion was like incredible. And then obviously with the team being out on the field and then doing the giant happy dance, I guess just talk me through, once you see it go out, what's happening.
So we had the first thing I did was I cried, you know, I just started crying, and like a lot of people did, and I just jumping up and down, and my wife and was downstairs sitting with my daughters and my daughter's husband.
Awesome.
They wanted to be outside in the crowd and not cooped up in the box.
Get it?
You know? So they're all down there jumping around. I turned around, you know, Justin Hollander, his wife, some of our front office people are up there. We just started hugging each other and crying. And I remember saying, this is the coolest thing that's happened in my major league life because of what it meant for the city and what it meant to that team. And we can talk about the fact that, that this generation of Mariners players, the guys in that clubhouse, because we're such a young team, they didn't really contribute to 21 years of missing the postseason. Mm-hmm. You know, they contributed to two, and they shouldn't have had to wear the two decades burden, but they did. And until that moment, I didn't realize how much it meant to our players to overcome that two decade long void. It mattered to them.
Yeah, what an interesting perspective. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
They had nothing to do with it, yet wearing the whole
I would think we've been trying to take that pressure or that onus off of them for years. Like, ah, this isn't on them. This is, you know, it's an organizational burden. This comes from, you know, generations of player.
Yeah.
And when it got right down to it, that's why they started getting tense in mid-September, is they saw how close they were to doing this. And from the time we started our rebuild back at the end of 2018, a lot of our young players, even in the minor leagues, would talk about what was going to happen the day we tripped this wire and got to the postseason for the first time and what that was going to feel like. And it never really dawned on me that this group of players was that, you know, was that thoughtful about the fact that this meant so much to so many people.
It's a very mature approach.
Yeah, really is. It's a mature group.
Yeah, Castillo, we got Luis Castillo in July.
Right about 1st of August.
Right, which by the way, again, thanks for that.
He worked all right.
I mean, just an incredible move.
Swing and a miss, and Alfaro strikes out. Castillo's 1-2. A wave and a miss! Swing and a miss! The 0-2. He gets them swinging after the slider. Oh, he's ducking away from strike three. And 98 gets him.
And locking him down too. Just what goes into locking somebody down like that earlier than later? Because in listening or watching shows, you know, and right out of the gate, he was showing his impact. You know, I am curious, at what point do you guys go sooner than later? And what goes into that?
So, you know, so we acquired him. We said, welcome to the Mariners. You want about $100 million. And he said, sure. We had a feeling when we traded for him that we would have, if there was an opportunity to sit him down and get someone excited about staying in a town, there's never been a better time to do it than Seattle in August and September. Come on. You know, that 6-week stretch when he first got here, we're playing incredibly well. It's a fun team to be around. The energy in our ballpark is just off the charts. You know, you go anywhere in Seattle, you go to a restaurant, you go to a grocery store, and all people are talking about is the Mariners. And the players feel that energy too. And he, I don't know, about a week after he joined us, when we acquired Castillo, we were in the midst of doing Julio's extension.
Wow.
About a week after we acquired Luis, we finished Julio's extension, and then we announced it right about there. And then when
Julio got extended, I don't know if you heard about that. Yeah,
yeah, it was unique. It only took a couple of days to work it out.
Yeah, isn't he extended like through like 2096 or something like that?
He'll be here until, you know, his son catches up.
Bro, please, thank you. Again, another solid move.
Thanks, everybody, for coming, especially the guys in uniform. You know, really cool that you guys showed up and support your teammate. This is a fantastic moment in the history of our organization. Over these last 2 years, coming out of our roster reboot, watching this city get excited about Mariners baseball, watching this team take it to a different level in terms of energy and on-field performance and come together in ways that we couldn't have imagined, truly. And to watch a young player like Julio show up on opening day and make his way through the first month of the season when things weren't so easy, and since the 1st of May, truly just be a driving force, not just for our team, but in baseball at large. He's very quickly become a very recognizable face. And this contract that we were able to arrive on with Ulysses Cabrera of Octagon, can't say enough about what Ulysses did in getting this done and working with Julio and collaborating with us on a contract that is really unique. And it was required. You know, we needed to do something unique and hopefully ensure that Julio spends the rest of his career here in Seattle. So with that, any questions that you might have, you know, I'll kick it to Julio and Ulysses if they'd like to add anything, but glad to answer any questions that, that anybody might have.
John?
The mission of the Mariners is threefold. One, win championships. Two, delight our fans. And three, serve the communities. We have a long-term commitment to winning, and we have a short-term commitment to winning. The signing of Julio Rodriguez to this contract is evidence of that commitment. I just want to thank Jerry DePoto, Justin Hollander, and their team for a tremendous job. I think Ulysses has a couple of comments. Ulysses?
Yeah, I think a lot of people will focus on the contract and the nuances and the details and the average annual value and the length. And really, that's missing the point on this one. I think this is all about the city of Seattle. I think it's all about the organization recognizing how much the Seattle fans love their athletes. I mean, I grew up in California and I live in Florida and I spent a lot of time going to different stadiums, but the energy that the fans here bring is not able to be compared anywhere else. I mean, I saw Ichiro girl last night. That was amazing. And you run through the names, Randy, Griffey, you know, you look at Gary Payton, look at Casey Keller. People here love their teams, their athletes, and I think what you guys have done here is give the fans and that next generation somebody to say, hey, let's go to the baseball game. Let's watch Julio and the team. You saw what happened last night when you guys won and that celebration with everybody dancing in the middle of the field. That's special. And it starts with the energy and the love of team. And I think Julio represents that. So I'm excited for everybody here.
And Julio, any opening comment?
I mean, what can I say? I'm just happy to be a Mariner. I'm just happy to be a Mariner for as long as I can. Happy to you guys for giving me the opportunity to change my family's life. Not today, but 2017 when you guys gave me the opportunity. And since that day, I felt committed to you guys. And as Ulysses said, this is not about the contract, how long it is. I would love to be a Mariners for the rest of my career and play in front of the Mariners fans. For the rest of my career, play with a lot of these guys here, being managed by Scott, having Ty as my babysitter, being with Mitch, everybody. Nah, like, I genuinely mean that. I love being here. I love being with everybody. And I love to keep representing this city and bring a championship because that's how we want here. And I know that's what we're driving for. Win for the city, win for these fans.
So Luis can feel what's.
But then he called us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He called, because we had inquired when we traded for him, you know, hey, let us know if the time comes when it's appropriate to sit down and talk about extending Luis. We want to do this. You know, it's typically not an in-season move
right.
for a veteran player. You know, we said if this is something you'd like to talk about, September of this year, we can do it in the off season or the spring of next season, which is usually your extension hot zone. And the agent said, "Oh, we'll let you know how it goes, and we'll give you some feedback." But you know, he's probably interested in talking about if the money's right. And then after we did Julio, the agent called back and said, "Hey, I just talked to the Rock. He's in." And it from there it took days to wow. negotiate the right deal.
And that's a good sign, I feel like, right?
Yeah. If he wants to be.
He's seen enough and he loves it. And that's another thing that I think is really special is that, like you said, a guy like that that's coming in that has nothing to do with, A, the most newest team member, so truly no ties to the decades drought, embraces it and is like, now cares about it as if he had been attached to it, right? And
wants
to probably end it as much as guys who have been here from, you know, for the longest tenure.
And then the you know what we were able to do with him fronting a playoff rotation is, you know, we matched up. We played, you know, maybe the two best offensive teams in the American
yeah.
League, but certainly two of the three, and maybe not just in the American League, maybe in baseball. And you know, Luis went out there and he showed up, man. It was very impressive to do that in Toronto against the Blue Jays and in Houston against the Astros, and he just shut them down.
Him.
Guerrero strikes out. Look at the movement on that pitch. Way inside, one away.
Before we get into that, and if you've talked at Najum about these experiences, just, you know, put up a stiff arm or something. But
if there's ever a day where I get sick of talking about these experiences, okay, like good. If you want to ask me about some, you know, the turd burger loss somewhere in the middle of September, yeah, let's talk about something else.
It still feels pretty fresh, too, I feel like. And also the momentum of just a few months ago and how we're only a few months away from starting up again is pretty fucking rad, right?
So the way that works in fandom, like with what we do, from the moment our season ended, now we are immediately transitioning toward building 23. Mm. You know, we're building our 23 roster, and we have far fewer holes to fill moving forward. You know, our young foundation.
Yeah.
We started a lot of our off-season work was done in season with guys like Luis Castillo. And you know, we're already starting to transition into that mode. But what's funny is so do the fans, because we went from, you know, the praise or the organizational praise, how excited people were, yeah. You know, literally crying in the streets, hugging one another that we made it over this hump, to knocked out of the playoffs, a lot of congratulatory, you know, emails or cards, immediately followed by the list of free agents that we should pursue, and here are the deals that I think we should do. And, you know, we'll get so many of those. It's letters and it's emails with people who've got ideas about acquisitions and how to run a $400 million payroll. It's fast.
That are fans.
Oh yeah, they're into it.
So the same way that I get pitched movie ideas or jokes from my stepdad, George, over here. And by the way, I'll say this, 87% of them, great ideas. Yep. There's a couple that we're going to try to see through on. But so you're getting fans that are sending in like truly
hundreds of
now. There's no way in hell that some of them are like, wow, that's
so actually. For years I responded to them, you know, to the inquiries, the letters, the ideas, because I always thought about it like, all right, if I'm a fan and I spent my whole life as a fan and I wrote a letter to a general manager or whatever I do in a given time, you know, how cool would it be if I get some kind of response walking me through, you know, why this is a good idea something we couldn't do, you know? Free agents, you can do it. You can't really do it when people are suggesting trades, because you can't talk about other people's players. That's tampering, right?
Right.
So, you know, we will, for years, I would take out a little note card and I would jot down a little response and stick it in the mail. And then it became kind of a thing that people knew I would respond. And then they started coming in heavier and heavier. And there's only so much time in your day that you can do that.
Right.
So now I'll occasionally, if somebody sends a nice, well thought out email, I'll type a little response. I can't really do much in the written reply group anymore. But, you know, it's from any of them, you'll get the, you know, I think it would be a fantastic offseason if we signed Carlos Correa and Kodai Senga, and it runs off the top free agents in each category, and then traded so-and-so for such-and-such, you know, that would be the finishing touch on our team. No, that just recreated our whole team, you know?
You never get anything that's like, hey, we, you know, I know we just locked in Julio, but like, think of the draft picks we could get for him next year.
We never get that one.
Okay.
Yeah, we never get that one.
Just a delusional fan. You said, I don't know how much you can speak to this, but before we sat down, that you have a lot of... what did you say? Oars in the water right now?
We're like a Viking boat right now.
Is this, obviously, I think it, being in a sweet spot of less holes to fill going into next year, 2023, but also because there's less holes to fill, maybe even a little bit more, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, not stress, but just because less holes to fill and maybe there's less options at those holes. So is there maybe more work to do?
I don't think it's that there's more work to do.
Right.
There are fewer targets. So you're probably, the stress level is knowing that once those targets go away, that dried up your dartboard, so to speak.
Right.
But, you know, we do have fewer holes to fill. And one of the things that we are conscious of, when we last sat down, you know, the first time we did this, you know, this is such a fun, it's a unique group. And part of what makes us engaging with our fans, that brings out the emotion that you saw for the final 2 months of this year. Some of what made our team good is the personality that the team has. And my biggest thing going into this offseason is we want to get better. We want to find ways to get better on the margins. We want to add meaningful impact to our lineup. We think our pitching staff is deep as is and high impact. We do want to get better offensively. How can we do that without changing the personality of our team in a meaningful way? Because once you change it, yeah, I'm not a scientist and I don't know the secret to, you know, how to make new Coke.
Right.
But I do know that I've screwed it up enough over time. When you have something that works, don't be too quick to change that thing.
Yeah.
You know, find the way to add to it without changing, you know, meaningfully changing the way the team works.
Love that.
Payoff. Broken back, dropping. Base hit. Frazier's coming home and the Mariners win it.
I think I just read actually something about you saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, about that some teams and organizations like to take a little more time finessing moves, right? And you were like, no, if we can do it now, let's act.
We're a bull in a china closet.
Gotcha.
You know, we have developed a reputation in the industry for being the candid team. This is what we want. This is how we want to do it. Are you in? And, you know, and we'll approach things in a very direct manner. And we've also developed a bit of a reputation for being on the creative side. So, you know, if we suggest something to somebody, but that's unappealing to them, we don't stop at no. You know, we just find the creative solution that, because nobody just says, we wouldn't do. They say, we couldn't do that because, and then they'll give you some kind of feedback and just take that feedback, start pulling on it. And that's when you start, that's how you put together deals. And, you know, as a result, we do a lot of deals because we don't stop at no. We pick up where no leaves us and we start a new idea.
Are we in the Aaron Judge sweepstakes?
No.
Yeah.
There's mostly because once we picked up Teoscar Hernandez and
again, huge. You know,
Teo can really hit.
Someone that we've always followed and admired, again, both for his on-the-field contribution and what we believe to be clubhouse locker room contribution to the environment. Obviously, that's something we take very seriously. We felt like a goal that we had in the offseason was we needed to get more dangerous offensively, you know, either by adding length throughout the lineup or adding a middle of the order impact bat. Obviously, there's still more work to do, we think, and there are things we'd like to do.
It's always a surprise for a player, I think. For me, this is the second time that I've been traded, so it's always a little bit of a surprise for the people. For me, it feels like it's a new chapter on myself, and I think I'm going to enjoy it the best that I can, and I'm going to give everything that I got to the Seattle Mariners and the fans.
As it works out with Teo and Julio in the outfield, we do want to continue to give our young guys opportunity. Mm. And one of the complications with the for us at the top of the free agent food chain, and this goes maybe it flies under the radar, is you know you can only add so much because right now I think with the exception of the San Diego Padres and the Atlanta Braves, you know no one owes more future dollars than the Seattle Mariners. 2024 and beyond, you know, there's only two teams that have bigger commitments than we do. And that comes with Logan Gilbert and George Kirby and Cal Raleigh, who will all go to salary arbitration in the next, you know, season or two.
Wow.
And, you know, that starts to build up heavily.
Yeah.
So
factor that in.
While we could easily float somebody on our 2023 budget, the 2023 turns into 2024, 2026, and 2028 when, you know, the bills are due on Robbie Ray and Luis Castillo and Julio, et cetera. So you do those things and you bite off something on the front end. What you wind up doing is you cut off your tail. Mm. And, you know, we want to build a sustainable winner, something that can last over time. And in order to do that, you have to show some restraint on the front end. So, you know, we went out and we did Teo and it fit because it was a 1 year commitment at what should be fairly high dollar. And, you know, and it gave us a chance to get to know another player. Because what we do know about him personality-wise, he would fit us. You know, have we checked in on the top free agents? We have. You know, would we be willing to go there on a certain number of them? Yeah, we probably would. You know, but it's going to have to really fit what we think our window is.
Right.
Because if it starts to tip the scales on our ability to keep the core of that team together, then you're making decisions that you can't undo.
I didn't get to ask you this last time, but I feel like most fans are so enamored by the whole winter meetings, trade deadline, the whole process. Even last time when we had to reschedule, which you were so generously still trying to fit it in, I think it was in the heart of the trade deadline, and you were like, yeah, if we can reschedule, it'd be great. I have about 9 calls I haven't gotten back to yet. And I was like, oh, yeah, like this is the most intense time for you guys. But is it like, you know, that scene of Moneyball, with Brad Pitt where he's, I think trading pain. He's doing a bunch of different moves and it's very intense. He's eating popcorn. He's calling 3 different people back. He's like, Joanne, get me this guy on the phone. He's calling a general manager saying, we want this guy. This guy's on the table. And then he called like the Giants and was like, hey, I heard that they want him, blah, blah, blah. Call me back.
Get your pyro on the phone.
You thinking Rincon?
Yeah, his season's done. He's lost faith. I think he's going to dump him.
Hardcore.
Shapiro on two.
Mark, Billy, let's be honest. A premier setup man isn't going to get you any closer to the playoffs.
Are you referring to Rincon?
He's a luxury you can't afford, man.
And you can? There's $500,000 on his contract, and we've got at least one other suitor.
By at least one, you mean one. Who is it?
I'd rather not say.
San Francisco. San Francisco.
I'll call you back.
What do you think you can get from Magnante?
Nothing. What's left on Benefro's contract?
275.
Suzanne, get me Sabian on the line. If we can get the Giants interested in Benefro, Mark's only got one buyer left for Rincon.
Us.
On three.
Sabi Sabster, it's Billy. What do you think of Benefro? I can let you have him for almost nothing.
Why would you do that, Billy?
Because I'm amazing.
Uh-huh.
All I want is a couple of bucks and a sweetener. Throw in, say...
Anderson.
I like Anderson.
No, you don't. Nobody likes him. I don't even know why I'm doing this, but let's just do it, okay? Benefro for Michelson.
Anderson.
See, I don't even know his name.
I'll think about it.
Think about it and call me back.
Is there an element to the chaos for you guys that's similar?
There is, and you know, it kicks in like that, especially at the winter meetings, where now you're in that kind of Jerry Maguire moment where you have two phones and somebody else is on the phone.
You just got back from there.
We're going there.
Are we going?
Yeah, we're going on Sunday.
It's in Vegas.
Yeah, the GM meetings we just got back from.
Gotcha. Okay.
The winter meetings the GM meetings are where the conversations start, and the winter meetings are usually when they culminate. So you start talking about the potential for a trade. That's when you first engage with agents about free agents. You know, we've already entertained a couple of free agents who we've brought in for visits that we sat down and spoken with.
Cool.
And, you know, some that you'd met before, others who you'd never met before. You know, I particularly was fond of Kodai Senga, who we sat down with.
Yeah.
Phenomenal impression. He looked every bit of the front of the rotation type starting pitcher because he's got, you know, really good stuff.
Yeah.
But, we didn't know anything about the person, and to sit down and get to know about that person and how they're wired. It really is when you're making these decisions, the puzzle is so much about the makeup of your team and, you know, every player that you add or subtract from a club, and sometimes you think you have it right and sometimes you don't, but it's all about the chemistry that you're creating. And you know, Jim Leland once said to me, I don't know, I'm not a chemist, but I know when you got something good, keep it. And as soon as you start to F with it too much, you know, you're going to wind up screwing it up.
Is it a fun, is it almost like, you know, a little baseball camp-esque with like the fun of it? It is Vegas. I'm sure, I don't know if the food is better during the general manager meetings or the winter meetings, but is the vibe looser or is it a little more tense? Because like you said, like now when you guys leave, there's going to be a little bit more immediacy for action, right?
So we go, you know, the GM meetings this year were in Vegas.
Yeah.
And we hit a couple of good restaurants.
Good, yeah.
We went to Amalfi one night.
Oh, yeah.
Which was fabulous. And then we went to the steakhouse, which, how can it be bad? It's called the steakhouse.
Yeah.
And, but it's 3 days, you're in, you're out.
Okay.
And then the, you know, all those conversations started in the time since now it's your fielding. We're on the phone every day. Justin, myself, Jesse Smith in our front office. You know, we're going back and forth with other teams, with agents. You know, we've recently signed, we're waiting to go through a physical, but we'll have signed a free agent to add to our bullpen.
Awesome.
And we're going through this every day. And as it all happens, you know, when you get to the winter meetings this year, they're in San Diego. that's when it turns into the 24 hours circus. You sleep for 4 hours a night. Everybody's running around like chickens with no head. And, you know, you think you're losing out. We send groups out on recon missions just to gather information because it truly is. It's a carnival. You know, you'll get there's thousands of baseball people, you know, and they'll congregate in the lobby. They'll be outside the hotel at the hotel bar. And, you know, it's how you make your chops as a young scout is you go down and the guy who comes back with the most or best information starts to catch the attention of the people in charge. And you know, guys will come back. Hey, so-and-so is looking to do this. So-and-so is looking to do that. And plans change for teams at the winter meetings because they were the team that won the sweepstakes for somebody. And then other adjustments have to be made. And if you are the first to pick up the phone when the other adjustments need to be made, that's when you find deals can be made. Deals can be had.
It could be 11:30 at night. You've just finished.
11:30. It could be 4 in the morning. You
right.
know,
it's, okay. It's, so 4 in the morning, let's say, and let's say Justin Hollander is, you know, he's hit his limit at craps. And he's like, look, and as I've been schmoozing, you know, the whoever's agent, and it's time to go. And then somebody goes, hey, just come get one more, you know, Zima with me. I know you're a big Zima guy, Justin. He goes, I'm actually not, but I'm, you know, when in Vegas.
He's got some under his desk.
He's got some under his desk. Look at the ice people. And so so he hangs for one more hang and gets maybe one tidbit or soundbite that is, you know, of use. And like, does he have full jurisdiction to at 4:30? Call you up and go, yo, I just heard this.
Oh, yeah.
Or does he save it for the morning and go, breakfast, I'm going to drop a bomb. And now our plans are changing, but it's, or is it kind of like all systems go?
Well, in Justin's case, uniquely, you know, I trust Justin to do anything that I would do myself.
Cool.
You know, and we are so familiar with what the other is thinking all the time that in that moment, if it seems like something we should do, he should just pull the trigger and then call and tell me we're doing something rather than ask if we're going to do
that's
something.
Huge.
That's the benefit that he brings to the table. And, you know, he's been with me on a couple of the late night, you know, where you're sitting there and you're now meeting with your seventh team of the day. And it's, you know, it's 1:30 in the morning and you're staring at the wall and it's the wall and that person's face are starting to meld and you're thinking, which team is this again? Who am I talking to? But that's when it gets fun. And, you know, a couple of years ago, we were also in Vegas for the winter meetings and Justin and Scott Service actually completed a deal that we had been working on for multiple days, you know, leading into it.
Yeah.
And I wound up in the hospital with blood clots on my lungs and they came in. This is before Justin was obviously promoted to general manager. And they came into my hospital room one of the teams that was involved in this three team deal wanted to see that I was on board with it. So they lifted my hand up from bed and put my thumb up in the air.
Holy shit.
Yeah, we got footage. It was great.
When was this?
This was winter meetings 2018.
Oh my God.
Yeah, 2018.
Had you had any help, a scare like that?
Yeah, I've had all kinds of weird shit. But in this particular case, we got to the winter meetings and I was having all kinds of like cramping and which was unusual for me. And then finally Scott took me downstairs and said, you gotta go to the hospital. And one of our baseball ops guys hopped in an Uber with me. We went over to the hospital and they figured out I had blood clots on my lungs.
So was it Goobs? Did he hop you in a Goobs Oobs?
He did not, but that would have been... I've been right with you. He's the most helpful guy in the
shout area. Shout out to Trevor Gooby, Goobs, as you call him. I want to get back to the
fun baseball things.
The atmosphere of what we just all got to experience. So you go down immediately. What? You spend a little bit of time up here, and then you're like, I got to get down to the party. That looks too
fun. Oh, no, we were down there right from the, yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah. Hugs, everybody, now I get downstairs.
When you see your wife and kids, or is it just... I mean, crazy.
See, oddly enough, I didn't get to see them, you know, until long, maybe an hour after the game was over.
Yeah.
And, you know, immediately we made our way down and, you know, goggled up and, you know, took off that. This is a lesson I learned years ago. The first time I was exposed to a post-game celebration, wear the B shoes because the A shoes aren't going to survive the event. So, you know, immediately I flipped on a pair of extra B shoes. I ran downstairs and then we were swallowed up in the celebration in the clubhouse.
Bonkers.
It was so much fun.
That's a dream, but man, I can't put this in the words that I get to be here wearing this, wearing these colors and this. I mean, it's been the craziest year of my life, and I'm just eternally grateful.
You, more than anyone probably in this room, know and understand what it means to the fans.
It does. Oh, man. It's cool, man. It's cool, dude.
And we were soaking wet, pouring champagne on one another, and already drinking more than our fair share. By the time we spilled outside, and my wife and family were outside with a number of other people, so you know, dragged them in and you know, made them a part of it, and it went on. It was well after midnight before we left, and
because the fireworks show still had to happen.
And right. I can't honestly tell you that it did. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast, and I'm sitting down because I got some big news. Usually I'm standing up to do comedy, but I'm sitting down now because I got the deal of a lifetime. First of all, sitting is bad for you. We all know that, whether we're sitting on planes or sitting on a beanbag chair watching porn in front of our kids. There's just too much damage you do on the body. Thankfully, Axion has come up with a chair that allows your pelvis to move the way it does while you walk. So all 33 vertebrae align into perfect posture. The result? Better breathing, better blood flow, and relief from the pain. It's crazy what you can do when you set your body to do it. Now, these guys are homies of mine. My buddy Dennis worked with the Clippers as their doctor for 27 years. He runs a wellness center called Peak Wellness. He's a fucking gangster and has saved me from surgery numerous times. I actually met Justin Bieber at his place, and I was in my boxers getting cupping done, and Bieber and I locked eyes, and I was like, this is how we were supposed to meet, and Bieber smiled, and I never saw him again. This chair is a game changer. It's changed the way I live, it's changed the way I breathe, the way I sit, and you guys right now can get that chair for 25% off using the promo code ALN25 at all33.com. It's incredible. You got to get it. It's the only chair out there to get. We will be getting them for the studio. Go to all33.com and use promo code ALN25 for 25% off this chair.
You guys all went to the clubhouse, right? Got your shirts and celebrated. And then everybody came back out.
Yeah.
Is that because somebody said, hey, fans are still here? Or
no, because the guys' families were out here.
Right.
So they were coming out one way or the other. And, you know, not until the initial wave of kind of celebration, the hugs, the fun, the pouring champagne over everybody. I don't know who it was, but somebody came in and said, you are not going to believe how many people are still out there. And, you know, that's when everybody started to spill back out. And the same thing, much smaller scale, but same thing happened to us in Toronto when we were celebrating there. You know, the number of Mariners fans that were in Toronto and that stuck around waiting for the clubhouse celebration to be over until we spilled out on the field was just phenomenal.
Yeah, I saw a video of you, I think with a cocktail in hand and fans down near the dugout just thanking you.
It went right up in the stands with them. You know, it just got up there and you know, actually, it was pretty funny. One guy had on a Mariners, like what I would call like a splashy Hawaiian shirt with all these Mariners logos on it.
Awesome.
And I said, that's a sweet shirt. And he said to me, he said, you want it? I said, no, you keep it. He goes, I like yours. And then we have one of those Rise October.
Yeah.
You know, and I just took the shirt off and I handed it to him. I said, here, you take it. And that guy, who, you know, he was in Toronto. But he was wearing a Mariners shirt. He recently sent me like a greeting card, like a note congratulating us on the season and mailed me his shirt. He said, I figured I would clean mine because I'm never going to clean the one you gave me because it was just soaked with champagne. I just gave him the shirt that we were wearing.
That's unbelievable, so, dude.
It's pretty cool.
That atmosphere. Okay. So once, how quickly does the celebration when it dies down? And first of all, Scott's, I mean, how great was that on the field? I mean, is that like, again, your relationship, we didn't get to touch on this too much last time, but I want you to speak to that a little bit because of what you guys went through in Anaheim, coming here together, building it up together. It truly, I feel like, is a rarity in sports to have you guys being at the helm, but having your, just going through this much together, I feel like is rare, right?
truly is, you know, and in his case, we were actually teammates.
That's
we
right.
played together.
That's right. It goes back even further.
Yeah, it goes back to my final year as a player. We were teammates then. We played against each other throughout the 90s. So, I've known Scott a long, long time. And, you know, Scott, myself, Manny Acta were the three people, you know, in our baseball group who've been here from the very start. I started, Scott came in, Andy McKay joined shortly thereafter. Manny Acta was the first coach we hired. We had a little celebration. We toasted with a shot. You know, we had this, a tradition was born last year. So this is 2021. We started a tradition of after a win, we would go down and everybody had little championship cups, you know, and the championship cup it's bigger than a thimble. It's about the size of a shot glass.
Right.
And we would hold our championship cups, you know, like the loving cup. And we had fireball and we would just pour these fireball shots.
Yeah.
And it started with our coaches and the coaches, you know, it kind of started to bleed out into, you know, our advanced scouting team and the analysts who would be downstairs. And then Justin and I would go down there and join. Well, before too long, now we got a couple of owners that are down there and it became a thing and everybody had so much fun with it. And just like the on-field dance, you know, the celebration dance after a win, we started doing this shot a fireball and it started out with six or eight people and it grew to about 25 at its height. And I think we were in Yankee Stadium. And this was, you know, we win the game. It was Luis Castillo's debut with the Mariners. And afterward, we're doing the fireball shot. And The Rock happens to walk in and he sees like this happening in the coach's room and he sees it in the coach's room. He just thought it was the coolest thing. And he said, come on, I want to do it. And so he takes the little thimble and he starts jumping. So from that point on, it became a celebration with the coaches and the support group and Luis Castillo. And he would come in and stand in the middle of the group. The way we used to start it was Scott would come in and make a toast to that game, whatever happened in that game. Mm. You know, and once the Rock started to take part, Scott would do his toast and it was slightly less entertaining than it was at home plate after we clinched. But he would go through his presentation, you know, guys, that was a hell of a win. And he'd tell you why. And, you know, and then once we got Castillo, you knew it was time for the drink. He'd come in and go, yeah. And then everybody would start to take their shot and start jumping up and down.
So you guys are both very well spoken and articulate, and even with a couple of beverages in them, it was I don't know if it was much needed, but it was like, you know, and those clips went viral too. And I remember watching so many different angles of them afterwards. But like, it was milk, you know. We were just milking the experience, which I felt like was awesome because
it was real.
Yeah.
No, it was real.
Big Duffer. Yes. Just want to say a few things on behalf of the team. This has been some kind of season. It has been a long time. Thank you to everybody that is here tonight and every Mariners fan in the Pacific Northwest. You brought the electricity tonight to this building, and it was unbelievable. You have made a difference with this team, and I thank you. When Jerry and I came here 7 years ago, we had a goal. We needed to end the effing drought. We did it. These players behind me are special. They care. They care about playing the game the right way, and they care about representing the city of Seattle because of you. Every day when the game starts, I look up those banners. We need to add another one. Yes, we've ended the drought. This team's just starting. We've got big games ahead of us, and we're going to need you with us. But for tonight, let's party!
And the drought, when you really like break it down, it's like, again, the stakes of the game, how it happened, full count, two outs, bottom of the ninth. It's bottom of the ninth, right?
Bottom of 10th. Oh, no, it was 10th.
10th, yeah. That's right. But the everything that was at stake, it was like, yeah, of course, like you should, people should not have to leave until they want to leave. And for the team to come back out and Scott to really, it was heartfelt too. And it was, you could see, and I want you to speak to that, like your guys' day to day and what you've, you know, put so much time into building and to have it happen like that. Is there something you got, like, do you guys have like a moment together? Did you text the next day? Just like, I fucking can't believe this. Or is it like, once you celebrate, is it like, now let's back to business?
Oh no, the next day we actually, because it's baseball.
Played.
You know, you come back and you play.
Yeah. Yeah.
We came back out the next day and we had a day game, and it happened to be the day that a day game. It was well into the morning hours.
You guys partied for a while.
Yeah, it went on for a good while.
Awesome.
And then there were a couple of our players who showed up the next morning at 8 o'clock, and I'm thinking, I know I just saw you looking at it. And they were gamers. They showed up and they were ready to go. And we gave most of the regulars a day off, but we were doing our presentations for our minor league award winners. You know, our minor league player of the year, pitcher of the year, and you know, think about this. Our minor league players, they go out and they play 144 game schedule. Mm-hmm. They're in places like Arkansas and, you know, Modesto, California, yeah. And they're not particularly close to Seattle. And they're here for one night. The award winners are here for one night, and that was their night.
They're here
for that night, and their families are with them, and they get to live that experience. And, you know, the excitement that they feel. So now it's Harry Ford, and it's the next generation of Mariner player. They're all sitting there and they're watching this, and they come out on the field on Saturday for the awards presentation, and the rest of us look like, you know, we just got dragged in from the street. And I thought to myself, you know, of all the years we've done this, that group of young players is walking out of here thinking, wow, what an awesome place this is. In years past, you get here on minor league awards presentation day, and there's a crowd of, you know, 11,000 people that are generally going to be kind with their applause. To come here on the day where you've got 48,000 people screaming like crazy who refuse to leave the ballpark. And what a moment for all those young guys.
Can't put a price on that motivation for them.
Yeah, so you can't make it up.
Either. Insane.
It wound up becoming a very good little short film that we've shown the free agents that we're trying to
you do that. That's a,
oh yeah,
a
yeah.
Press kit tool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So just the same way that I'll send a reel, you know, for any sort of acting gig or whatnot, you guys do that for trying to get people to come here.
Absolutely. And it's a, and
is
some
Riz narrated?
Cases, Riz narrated our Shohei Ohtani presentation
cool.
back in the day. And which was fab. He does an awesome job.
It's unreal.
Now the one we did this year, it was naturally easy because there were so many highlights that included Riz and Dave Sims and Aaron Goldsmith. You know, we were able to drum something up and just piece them back to back together. And it's pretty awesome.
All right. Toronto, the vibe there, obviously let's just go right to the clinching game or talk me through just the opening of the series. Nerves, excited. Do you almost feel, and you would hear people talk about like, just clinching was enough. Was that the there's no way that was the sentiment. It was like, we can beat anybody.
We thought we could beat anybody. And, you know, as it works out, we got on the side of the bracket that nobody really wanted to be on, having to play in Toronto and then in Houston. And, you know, oddly enough, we felt like we were a good matchup with the Blue Jays because we can generally shut down right-handed hitting.
Yeah.
And they were very right-handed. And it's part of the reason why we, as we started that it's a three-game series. If that is a seven-game series with their offense, maybe it's a different story. I don't know. But we thought, you know, facing a right-handed heavy lineup with the pitching that we can run out there, we felt like we were going to be okay. So we planned that series, you know, like we are winning this series. How do we plan the Astros series to give ourselves the best chance to win? And,
wow.
And that's how we laid out our pitching. And, you know, it ultimately didn't quite work as we had hoped, but we thought that the best chance that we had of winning is if we set up Logan Gilbert to start series two. And we were willing to roll the dice that meant we first had to get through series one. And, maybe the part we didn't expect was having to use George Kirby to close out the final
which
game.
Which was awesome. Yeah, that was some big unit 95 shit.
Here's the stretch. And the Kirby 0-2 pitch to Tapia on the way. Swinging a fly ball center field. Coming in, Julio. He makes the catch and the ball game is over. The Mariners win the wild card series. They're going to Houston to take on the Astros in one of the most incredible, miraculous finishes and comebacks we have ever seen. The Mariners celebrate with a two-game sweep over the Blue Jays here in Toronto. The Mariners win it. A final score of 10-9. The guys doing their happy dance. And guess what? Not only are the Mariners taking this series to Houston, that series will take the series back to you fans in Seattle.
He's awesome.
Coming out like no
unflappable
nerves.
And he has them. He's just able to manage it. And it's he's just such a cool. My wife, we were walking back from workout day at Rogers Center, and just so happened that Kirby was walking back with us, and my wife Tammy, she had never met George, and as we're walking back to the hotel, you know, he's just talking about the way the final month has gone, the season, how he feels going into the postseason. We talked a lot about his innings, et cetera, and then just his family and the experience of going through this in his first year. And, you know, he broke off to go one way, and Tammy and I went back to get a cup of coffee. And as soon as he turned and walked away, she said, "Wow, is he some kind of composed?" And I said, "Oh yeah, it jumps right off the page."
At that age, that's crazy.
Yeah.
It is. It does translate off the field, right?
You look so comfortable in the big leagues.
Appreciate that. Thanks for having me on too. I've been just working super hard. Added that sinker into my arsenal. It's been a great pitch for me. Just getting guys super uncomfortable. And I've been just filling it up. It's the name of the game.
And whatever it is that he takes on, he's just good at that thing, whatever it is. It could be ping pong or pool or throwing 100-mile-an-hour baseballs.
Take me through your emotions of the clinching that game. I mean, I'm backstage at a show in Peoria, Illinois, listening. I mean, like nine different group texts. Like were you prepping, like I think most of us were, for game three?
That game seemed so out of our grasp,
yeah,
at one point. And, you know, knowing that the Blue Jays can rattle off a half a dozen runs with anybody, you know, when we got so far down in that game, you didn't think there was a snowball's chance. And here they come. They just started doing it. And then, you know, crazy stuff started happening and the blooper falls in. And you
energy
know,
the, shift in the stadium.
There's, you could feel it. And the fans could feel it. And the first thing that I thought of, I turned around to Justin. I said, "We're going to win this game." You know, and then JP hit the ball that got caught up there in the triangle, and you know,
the exact perfect spot.
Yeah, the guys are crashing into one another.
With two outs.
It's amazing, and that's how, you know, that kind of magic is. You know, first of all, it made it all the more enjoyable jumping around and having the fun downstairs. But if you the craziness that is like going in and winning that game in Toronto, in game two, going into Houston and the way game one ended for us. And then, you know, the even crazier, the 18 inning game when we came back to Seattle, we may not have made it to the World Series, but we had an epic trip through the postseason.
Oh yeah. the ultimate highs and lows. Yeah,
really cool.
We'll speak to that too, because so once you win in Toronto, I mean, again, is it just another like, holy shit, like this is, do you, is it, you know, can you get ahead of yourself and go, wow, the magic carpet might be just going to carry us through until the end because of the way this game just went?
I think we all believe, yeah. You know, and our players more than anyone else, our players believe. There's something about being super young and being extremely talented. You don't know what you're incapable of. You know, you just go out and you do it. And I think the, you know, from the pundits, you know, the national media attention that was paid to our series with the Astros were roughly, this is going to be a massacre. This team has no chance.
Yeah.
You
guys are paying attention to that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And the guys kind of took it and ran with it. Like we have played the Astros so many times through the years. We have had such a tough time in Houston that I think there was just a general screw it. Let's just go out and do what we do. And the one thing that was kind of on everybody's, you know, the tip of their tongue was they've never seen the version of us that has this version of Julio and The Rock, you know, and they never have because we finished playing the Astros so early in our season.
Yeah.
They didn't see Luis Castillo. You know, they had seen a good version of Julio, but they didn't see what Julio kind of evolved into as the season drifted along because our schedule is so front loaded with the Astros.
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, you know, that was, as that game started, it was about Luis Castillo. And then here comes the offense and they pour it on Verlander early. And we were doing things that we don't do in Houston because we turned into a different team. The mentality shifted. Hey, they've never seen this version of us. We got them.
The emotional, from Toronto to then how game one ended, you know, and I feel like both you guys spoke about it, you and Scott, of like, hey, man, it's fucking baseball. Shit happens, the highs and lows. Like, we're playing again tomorrow. So it's like you know, and it almost feels like easier said than done coming off a game like that where you're like, because some people idiotically, and it might have been Russo, you know, the series is over. You can't come back from that win. That's a game that you should have had it. You didn't get it. But I'm like, it's one fucking game.
Yeah.
It's a long series. What is the?
I was with the Red Sox in 2004. Yeah. Anything can happen, you know.
Is how much though? And maybe you can speak from your perspective and the clubhouse. Does emotional up and down from Toronto to that, can it like take it out of you a little bit?
A little bit, but it didn't. We should have won the next game too.
Right.
And you know, our guys show up every day, and they just they keep fighting.
You get conditioned to just wipe it away, right?
Yeah, and that's just the personality of our team. They grind, and they know that's their personality. They're grinders, and they showed up the next day, and they knew it was just a freak thing, you know. And that does happen in baseball. And we showed up the next day, and we should have won that one too.
Yeah.
And it's just a freak thing. And if you look back in that series, and this is phenomenal, I'll remember this for the rest of my life. We played 36 innings in a three game series, which by itself is fantastic. Yeah. The Astros led for 4 innings in 36, and we got swept, which is almost impossible to do. But, you know, it gave the guys that we got swept, which by itself means we didn't get to move on. They did. But the result of our being in there is that they now believe and our team believes that we can go out there and beat them. And I think by the end of it, and there were other teams in baseball that made this observation. You guys may have been the next best team in baseball when that series was going on.
Sure.
With the Astros.
Nobody else gave them a run like that after that. All right. So you come home for the first home playoff game in 20 some years. Bonkers. I mean, just energy
crazy.
Times 10 from the big dumper night.
From the get-go. And came in, and this is you told me to pin, the Felix throwing out the first pitch.
Yeah.
You know, that was something that had been in the works for a couple of weeks, and none of us have seen Felix since his last day with the Mariners.
Wow.
And, you know, periodically, you know, someone, you know, Franklin Gutierrez might get a text or sure. have a conversation with him. But by and large, none of us have had much conversation with Felix. He went off the grid, moved back to Miami. And, you know, when he agreed to come out and do it, it was a pretty cool thing. And you knew that it would be a good kickoff. And I wish it would have happened with, a 1-1 series or a 2-0 rather than down 0-2.
Right.
But when he walked out and I saw the way the fans reacted and you know, his involvement, but I flash back when I got to the ballpark, you know, I walked into my office or up into the office spaces and immediately when I walked up, I said, I think I smell a Felix because he is unmistakably one of the best smelling players that's ever played.
What does he wear?
I don't know what it is, but it's just this magical. It's like the Kavorka. It drags you in, and you know, I walked around the corner and saw he and his brother, and talked to him for a little while, and then the way the fans kind of embraced him. I don't know. I don't think he was prepared for that. I don't know that he was ready to be loved that way.
Also,
and he has more.
He bleeds Seattle.
He does, and he can engage the crowd like no other player.
Totally. Oh, his pitching out. Yeah, way he would like, I mean, with his core, like, yeah, dude, really. Fans love to have the fourth wall broken and to be connected like that. I mean, it's especially with pitchers. Also, probably the closest thing to pitching a playoff game, right? To be on the mound for a playoff game. I mean,
in that moment, which is that, you know, we couldn't really deliver it for him through his years playing, but he got to experience it in a different way.
So the dumper walk-off, greatest baseball moment, but the 18-inning game, I was up here for it because we were planning to go to the next game. The most exciting, as obviously gut-wrenching as a finish as you could ask for, but the way that the bullpen came through, and every inning had moments where it was like, fuck, dude, how do we get out of this?
The
and then the drama. And I can only imagine, again, what it felt like. And I'm just trying to, like, think of some certain brash at-bats were crazy. But, like, it just seemed like one after the other, guys coming in throwing the best stuff they've ever thrown and getting out of it to where you're just like, there's no way we're losing this.
Two on and two outs. And they are going to pitch to Altuve. Swing and a miss and a slider. He got him. Strike three. That will retire the side. Holy smokes. What a performance by Matt Brash. And the Astros leave two runners stranded in scoring position.
And it was going to be tough to come back from down, you know, two games. In a shorter series. But the ball that Julio hit like 7,000 miles an hour off the left field wall, that ball is a foot from being a homer and the game's over and we never go that far. And, you know, and I can't tell you that our pitching is lined up any better than their pitching because their pitching staff is as deep as I've ever seen.
Crazy.
It's just crazy deep. But, you know, to get to win that game at home, you know, and have that type of momentum on your side, because our guys truly believe that we should have won the first two games. And, you know, to have that kind of momentum, that's when crazy stuff happens.
Yeah.
And you know, especially when you have your home fans on your side. And our fans are relentless in the way they get after the Astros when they're here.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just, you know, the whole thing is kind of fun.
From the whole experience, did you take dirt from Toronto? Did you take
you
did. Because I know, and Goobs just told me this, so I want to talk about it for a few. Your baseball memorabilia side of you. Did not know. You have a door, he said, that like people have signed. Like, just to take us through the museum of what
so
you got.
I did not personally grab the dirt, but our director of team travel, Jack Mossman, is a awesome guy. And he was thoughtful enough. Jack is one of the creators of the fireball moment. He was thoughtful enough to go out and he grabbed a ton of dirt at, you know, both clinches.
Awesome.
Here at home and then in Toronto. And he took mini bottles of fireball, filled them all up and dated them. You know, and
incredible,
which was great. He also made sure that everybody got a certified game used ball from the clinching games, and you know, the Major League Baseball authenticators tag them and sign off on them. So
you geek out about that stuff, yeah?
It means something to me. You know, Scott gave me the lineup card from the clinching game to hang on the wall in my office,
cool.
Which is, you know, with all the nicknames and the fun stuff, and which I thought was, again, really cool. But I've been the baseball memorabilia since I was a kid. You know, I started out like a lot of kids collecting baseball cards, and it kind of grew into something bigger as I became, like, worked my way into adulthood. And then when I started playing and you start meeting all your heroes, and I think I may have told you this story.
Yeah.
The first time I encountered Tom Seaver.
Right.
That day, it was early in my very first year in the big leagues. And now you're seeing, like, oh my gosh, there's George Brett. That's Tom Seaver. There's Nolan Ryan. And you're around all these guys. And, you know, and I had a pretty big, like, baseball card collection, had some signed balls, things like that. But then I just went over the top. And we had, you know, by the time I finished playing, we had like a museum in the basement of my house. And when, you know, I collected like real antique stuff, like the autographs of long deceased Hall of Famers, you know, signed contracts from, you know, the great players of all time from when they were, you know, in their heyday in the 20s and things like that. But, you know, signed baseballs from luminaries like Walter Johnson or Babe Ruth, things like that, you know, like the Sandlot ball.
Yeah.
And, you know, some awards that, you know, you're able to pull out. During my last couple of years as a player, I played for the Rockies in Denver, and as guys would come through Denver, you know, three or four from a team or two coaches and a player, you know, they'd want to come over and see the collection. So, you know, Don Baylor, who was my manager in Colorado for a number of years, had since moved on. I think he was with the Braves at the time as a hitting coach. And he came through and he brought a couple of Braves coaches and Frank Robinson out to the house. Frank was in a tweener. He wasn't managing at the time. And they come out to the house and Groove, we called Don Baylor Groove. Groove looks up at the walls and he goes, he said, JD, you got no more room for anything on the walls. You have to have people start signing in between the pictures. And I said, there's always the doors. Because there were doors leading to like the water heater space or to a bathroom. And so, you know, from that moment on, guys started signing and leaving messages on the doors, and then they would sign off on it. So, you know, like, you know, I remember a couple of the messages that were first went up, you know, like, JD, love, you got a lot of balls, you know, something like that. And they would just sign these doors. And that was, you know, I retired a couple of years later, and we moved from Denver to Kansas City, back to Denver again, from Denver back to Arizona, and we kept moving. So every time we'd move, we would just take the doors down and take the doors with us. And, you know, and at a certain point, they didn't make sense anymore because there was no more collection around them.
Yeah.
You know, it was as houses got smaller, the collection had to get condensed.
Right.
But it was so fun while we were doing it.
My buddy Bob Stelton, who hosts Wyman and Bob on ESPN 710, said he told me to ask you about, I think it was during your playing days. I don't know if it was a superstition with a Nolan Ryan card in the jockstrap.
Yeah.
Is that a real story?
Real story. Yeah. I was a kid, actually. I was in college, and I wouldn't try this to do it now. But throughout my time in college, I never wore a cup, so I pitched with no cup.
And, bold move, by the way.
Yeah, which seems stupid, and now I look back on it thinking, what an idiot, right? But I kept a Nolan Ryan baseball card tucked in the little pocket of my jock, and I said, "Don't worry, the boys are getting protected by Nolan."
Seen him punch Robin Ventura, I'm going to be fine.
this was in the this is 1986 to 89, and I wore this 1972 Nolan Ryan baseball card in my jock. And
was it in a case? Is that why you were so protected?
No, it was just in there. And
sleeve, just by itself.
Just a card.
Just Nolan's face, just getting teabagged by DePoto.
That's right.
Wait.
and that year, you know, I had a pretty good year. My sophomore year in college, I did some good things, and Baseball America got a load of the fact that I wore this card in my jock, and they wrote a story about it.
Please tell me Nolan has gotten wind of this.
Oh, he's aware. Yeah, he was aware. Later on, you know, I met him when I got to the big leagues, not too long after that, actually. We're old Texas State and old Arlington Stadium. Yeah. This isn't, so now they're at the new Taj Mahal. Previously, they were at the ballpark in Arlington. The one before that, which was the original ballpark in Arlington, is where I first got to the big leagues, and that was the spot, right? And first time I was ever in there, I asked if I could meet Nolan Ryan. So I asked our traveling secretary, Mike Segi. I said, "Seg, is any chance I can meet Nolan Ryan?" He goes, "Yeah, we'll take care of it." So they take me out, you know, this old ballpark, you would walk out of the clubhouse and you're just standing in a parking lot. You know, like now it's all security and you would walk out and you're in like a gravel parking lot.
Yeah.
And the way the clubhouses were set up, you know, you shared a common gravel parking lot. So he takes me out into this gravel parking lot and Nolan Ryan is sitting on a milk crate, signing all of the things that guys like me would send over to have Nolan Ryan sign. It was like this pallet of stuff that was driven over there, balls and photos and like hundreds of items. And he's just sitting there on the second day of every homestand, he'd just sign all this stuff away. And, you know, I sat there and I talked with him for about a half an hour. I told him, you know, about the baseball card thing.
How'd he react?
Probably about as down the middle as you can react. You know, I mean, it really doesn't have.
What are you supposed, yeah. Which is, no, by the way, appropriate.
That sounds kind of crazy to me. You know, something. And
Bobby Bonilla, my butt crack, so I get it. You know,
yeah. He goes. That night, I go out there and pitch against the Rangers, and it's about the best stuff that I can remember having in a big league game.
Awesome.
I wind up getting a save, and the next day I'm out there doing my running, and Nolan's duck walking across the outfield doing his walking striders that he did every day, and he gets up on top of me, and this is after talking with me the night before on the milk bucket or the milk crate. He said, "Threw ball good last night. Keep doing that, you're gonna be in this league a long time." And this is, again, it's before cell phones. That ballpark in Arlington is one deck. There is no upper deck, which is laughable now.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I ran up the steps of the one, you know, lower bowl, lower tier onto the concourse, and I grabbed a payphone. I collect call my dad, and I said, "You are not going to believe what Nolan Ryan just said to me." I was the original like geek kid that just happened to make it to the big leagues and play, and it became, you know. I enjoyed every single minute of it. Never took for granted the magic that is being a big leaguer. It's phenomenal.
That's insane. And what's cool now is, like, you know, you've created, as we wrap this up, I mean, an ambiance now and a culture with the organization in the city where it's like those types of moments are happening for our players, but also like the stuff and how generous the players are and you guys are with the community. It's like, when the team is good and there's so much more potential and excitement going into the next season, that's what I want to wrap up on is your thoughts about going into next season. But it's like, it's way, the amount of kids that probably know now every player on the team. Like Haggerty is not like, is probably.
He swags. He's a dude.
Probably many kids' favorite player because Julio is such an obvious choice. And it's like, but you know what I'm saying? We have now a cast of characters where it's like, you know, people are gonna, you know, France jerseys and Suarez, you know, it's like there's somebody for everybody, which is very cool. I have my Airbnb already locked in for a weekend in spring training. So I'll see you down there again. What is going forward to 2023 as we wrap up here? Just kind of your place right now. Where is your head at going into? And I guess, what are you most excited about for next season?
There's what this team looks like with another year under its belt. You know, it's this. We still have one of the youngest teams in the league, and the core players. For, you know, Julio's going to be 22. It's a George Kirby's going to be 25. As will Cal Raleigh, and you know, Logan Gilbert's going to be 26 years old. Like we've not even gotten to the point where the core of this team is even to what would traditionally be called your prime years. And they're already so good.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got, I think, a healthy season from Ty France. So, you know, what we can do with just learning one more year about this group. And then what we can add to them. You know, we still have a couple of months where we can, you know, what does Teo look like in the middle of that batting order? Can we find another one just like him and add it between now and then? Ideally, that could be someone who plays second base for us.
Right.
But, you know, as it goes, just find what I see or envision with this team is just sustaining. And it may not sound sexy, but you know what the Braves were able to do. Yeah, yeah. It's what the Braves were able to do for like 16 straight years. Our goal is to bite the apple as many times as we can, because if we're consistently in a position to take a bite at that postseason apple, there's you got to be pretty unlucky to only win one in 16. You know, it's a, there's when you're that good. And, you know, our general take is that if we are just constantly in that postseason dance and we just keep getting our bite, you know, we're going to win our fair share.
Are you pumped for spring training with this amount of, because not every team gets to enjoy what we just enjoyed and know what we have to look forward to on top of the All-Star game being here, which I feel like is a good omen just from 2001. So are you like genuinely like pumped to get to Arizona and be around just like the whole atmosphere?
I always am. You know, it's funny, you know, you said with the winning, our players are terrific. If we're winning or we're losing, they're awesome in the community. There's similarly, you go to spring training and I would be lying if I told you, even in years where you go to spring training, you know, it's a pretty, you know, bleak out, you know, outlook for your season. You still go to spring training and that first day, you're like, we are going to be awesome. You know, you're watching guys throw in that first bullpen thing. Oh, he did his work. And then 2 weeks later, you're like, whew. But it's such an exciting time to be there. And we do have, we have so much to look forward to. We have this group of players who we have, those who aren't here yet, who will be added to this group. And then there's another young wave that's coming. And that's how this thing was built, is by trusting your young players. And we're going to continue to do that. There's a lot of talent yet to come.
This was amazing. Guys, Jerry DePoto, give it up.
This is
a living legend. Thanks for making time again. Hopefully, I think I texted you our record after my first pitch. I think it was like 23-6.
Guess who's throwing out the first pitch on opening day?
Who? Do we have that? No, I think there's probably, you know, see if Steve Poole is available. Do you know who Steve Poole is?
I don't.
He's I think he's still retired. He might be, but he was a weatherman here for Como News 4 when I was a kid. So yeah, he's probably, there's a good reason you don't know who he is. First celebrity I ever met though.
But why would he throw out our first pitch?
Exactly, dude. Thank you. That's all I needed on tape. Just in case Poole is being brought up in conversation and it's Poole versus Ray, we're going to isolate that audio.
Got it.
That's how they'll go with me. He was the first celebrity I ever met at the Seattle Aquarium and he had a headshot on him. And I go, Steve Poole. I had the balls in the fifth grade to go, Steve Poole, you're cool or whatever. I said to him, you know, I don't know. I was geeking out and a little bit nervous. And he took out a headshot. He goes, you want a picture? And I was like, I didn't know how to say no. Cause even in that moment as a kid, I was like, this is very awkward that you have a picture
you
of yourself.
Just know.
And you just know. And you assume that that's what I want. All I really wanted was a little bit of eye contact. Anyway, I digress.
So I had a teammate who used to walk around with his baseball cards in a little thing in his pocket, you know, and if he'd meet somebody, oh yeah, let me give you a card. And he would just give him a baseball card.
Not mad about that.
Yeah. I'd say there's
kind of douchey.
It's a little douchey,
yeah. You know,
but I've never forgotten it. That's 30 years ago.
Who's the guy?
There. Yeah.
Say it off air. It was Wally Joyner. No, because that move is like, you know, again, you want to be prepared for the moment, like whether, because it's a big deal for them and it takes very little off you to have cards in your pocket, but.
There you go. Yeah, it's just for you. Take it home.
Have you ever done the, where people are waving and it's the person behind you and you intercept the wave?
Oh, it's that moment. I have had that moment. Yeah.
Sucks.
Actually, that moment may have happened to me in the last week or so in our own dining room.
Okay. I thought I just ended the drought, but I thought you were, you're the man. Thanks for
appreciate
making time,
you.
Dude.
Thank
you're
you.
The best.
I'm Tommy Fite.
And I'm Mercedes Javid.
And we're the hosts of Till the Dirt.
On our show, we talk about life.
Your life.
Our life.
Relationships.
Your relationship.
Our relationship.
You may already know us from Bravo's Straws of Sunset, but there's still so much more to be told and tea.
Listen to Till the Dirt on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.